What is up, Packers fans, NFL draft fans? Welcome back to what I would only guess is the final NFL draft preview edition of the Packer Report podcast, brought to you by Stadium View Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall. We're going to call this one the Megapod. I'm not sure quite how long it's going to go on, but we brought on two fantastic Packers writers, two fantastic Packers draft experts. My editor, the Scotty to my Michael at the Packer Report, Andy Herman. Andy, how are we doing?
I'm doing great, Ross. Thanks so much for having me on. Excited to talk some draft. This should be a ton of fun.
And may he rest in peace, Ryan Hilsen, because my longest running podcast partner in the whole wide world, Jacob Westendorf. Jacob, how are we doing?
Yeah, I guess if you guys are Michael and Scotty, that makes me Dennis Rodman.
That'd be fantastic.
I've got to start. Grant. There we go.
I think you're easily the most tattooed of the three of us.
That's got to be true. So I'm going to go with Rodman. I'm going to grow my hair out and dye it. And if the Packers pick somebody that I really like on Thursday, I'm going to wear a wedding dress on Friday. So that's what we're going to go with.
Sure. I like it. I like it.
You do you.
Absolutely. So we're going to just kind of give you this is going to be for the diehards. We're going to get into the nitty and the gritty. We've had a ton of just phenomenal guests on. John Ledyard and I did sort of the offensive line and the linebackers. Obviously, Brad Kelly and I went through the wide receiver group. Quick bit of news, and I just want to kind of check in with you guys. I don't think it's wise to pretend, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think it's wise to pretend any of us have a great Jamal Davis take. Phenomenal athlete out of Akron. I think played actually a little bit with the Dolphins in some regular season time. But the guy I want to talk about quick is Gerald Willis. And Gerald Willis was a guy that made my top 120. He was number 120 last year on the big board. I think he was like 110 or 111 on the Packers big board, just shifted up a little bit because of some positional value as far as last year's team needs. Ended up as like my best player available, or one of my best player available is going to the sixth round. One of my best players available going into the seventh round. One of my best players available going into undrafted free agency. I believe he ended up signing a deal with Baltimore, getting cut and ending up with his hometown or home college town, at least Miami Dolphins. Andy, do you have a take on either of these guys? I mean, do you remember scouting Willis? Do you have any feel for how he might have any kind of an impact, or do you think this is just bottom of the roster stuff?
Yeah, I think it's probably that they felt that Willis, primarily is probably better than somebody that they could have got at the bottom of the priority free agent list. I think it was Justice Mosqueda, actually, who posted, I thought, a really interesting thought on Twitter, in that Green Bay usually does such a fantastic job of bringing in some of the priority free agents for visits and using their visits for that to kind of woo and win over some of these priority free agents so they can get them in the door as soon as the draft is over. They didn't have the opportunity to do that this year. And so I think, maybe claiming a couple of these guys is a way to kind of get guys in the door, that are maybe equal to or greater than some of the priority free agents that maybe they would be left with, because maybe some players are wary of going to cold Green Bay and haven't had the opportunity to meet with the staff. So I think this could be a smart move in that regard. And I'm right there with you, Ross. I really like Gerald Willis coming out a season ago. I thought he was legitimately, probably the top priority free agent left on my board when the draft was over. And, it's exciting to kind of get that type of player. I'd still be fairly surprised if he was anything more, than a camp body at this point, but you just never know. Gilbert Brown was a great example of somebody who, kind of had a wayward career until he found his path in Green Bay. And there's certainly been players like that in the past as well. So you just never know. And I like the prospect, and I'm excited that Green Bay was able to pick him up for nothing.
Yeah, we talked about, or I have talked about in the past. In fact, Michael Cohen wrote a piece on just a tweet of mine about Brian Gutekunst's love for draft pedigree, getting guys like a Will Redmond, getting guys like Nico Siragusa, mid-round picks, guys that at some point they really believed in. And I think that probably applies to Willis, although they certainly had ample opportunities to take him and never did. Maybe they made him an offer in undrafted free agency and he chose to go elsewhere, but a lot of back and forth between that Baltimore front office and Green Bay front office. Baltimore was the one, the guys that he ended up signing with right away. Jacob, any take on this? I mean, I get the feeling it's just kind of bottom of the roster stuff and we're talking about it to talk about it, but maybe not.
Yeah, it might not be. I mean, let's be honest, guys, the defensive line depth, there's an opportunity there to jump in and potentially replace some guys like Montrevious Adams and Tyler Lancaster. And I mean, really, if you go into the year, if you told me right now, who are guys that are locks to make the roster on the defensive line, I would tell you Kenny Clark and Dean Lowry with a really good chance, I think, at Kingsley Keke. But other than that, there's not a whole lot there that is like awe-inspiring along that front. So he has an opportunity. Andy brought up Gilbert Brown. That was another good example. I'd heard his story on this podcast about how that all kind of worked out for him. And I'm not going to compare him to Gilbert Brown, obviously, but it's that kind of opportunity to where he has to beat out Adams and Lancaster, and there's some potential to do those kinds of things. So if he can do something like that, yeah, it's a bottom of the roster thing. Is he going to play? Is he going to take snaps from Kenny Clark and help him? No. Is he going to be an impact player next to Kenny Clark and maybe supplant Dean Lowry? Probably not. After that, I mean, Tyler Lancaster, it's not like he's an impact player. And Montrevious Adams is somebody we hear about every year in training camp, and that has yet to surface on the field. Keke, I think all three of us really like him. We've all said some nice things about him. But he's a second-year, fifth-round pick. Top 50 pick, that's great. But it's not a, it's not somebody they've got a big investment in either. So surpassing him isn't out of the question. I wouldn't call that likely, but he'll be a bottom of the roster player, potentially work his way into a rotation of a defensive line that needs some bodies.
For sure. And I think you look at that edge group as well. You lose a Kyler Fackrell. You have an obvious need there at edge four. Maybe they keep five guys, but Randy Ramsey is a player that they think they like a little bit. Tim Williams, you talk about classic Goot grabbing somebody with draft pedigree. He was, I think, a top 100 pick by Baltimore, and a pass rush guy. You try to figure out, okay, if they're not going to address edge early, which I don't think they will. I mean, I would be relatively surprised if any of their top 100 picks were on a pass rusher. Then you start to get into, okay, who's actually in that camp competition for edge four? And maybe Jamal Davis has a chance, and maybe he doesn't, you know, and I've seen some people talk about, you look at his frame, you look at his size, maybe he makes the Brad Jones kick inside. I don't mean to, you know, give anybody any PTSD for Brad Jones, but he is not that massive dude. He's kind of that 6'3", 245 type edge rush guy that can play a little of both, kind of like a Clay Matthews. But let's dive into this draft class a little bit. Jacob, where do you think this class has a lot of strength? And do you feel like that matches up with where Green Bay is and when what they need?
Thankfully, the answer to that question on some fronts is yes, I do feel like it matches up. We've all talked about it. Ross, you went through the tiers. I don't remember the exact number of quality starters you had in there, but it was a high number. It wasn't like there's a low group of players that you think that could be good players and potentially become in your best four quality starter type players. I mean, we're talking about the potential. I don't know how likely it is, but you know, 7 or 8 wide receivers going in the first round alone. And even if that does happen, there's some quality niche players that you can get later in the draft. You talk about guys like John Hightower and Darryl Mooney and some of those players that can just fill a role for you. A lot of Packers fans wanted Robbie Anderson, and you can draft John Hightower in the fifth round and get him for 10 cents on the dollar. I mean, that's dirt cheap compared to what you were going to get with Robbie Anderson. The receiver class is very strong. I think that's been talked about ad nausea. You talk about some of the guys at the top with this linebacker class. I think there's some mid-rounders that Green Bay could really like. Willie Gay, Troy Dye. The Jordan Brooks thing's a little interesting if they're talking about him as a top 60 pick, but if you can get him in the mid-rounds, that's a nice player to add. And then you get later with guys like Marcus Bailey. The only thing that I don't think matches up necessarily with Green Bay's needs is, and it kind of depends on how you feel about their need at defensive line, defensive tackle, the class there after Javon Kinlaw is not great. And that's something that, as far as Green Bay's needs, It could fall in line with something that they really do need. Mark Eckel did a great story with an NFL scout talking about the cornerback class, and he says the corner class is as deep as the wide receiver class. That's kind of a sneaky need. And then the offensive tackles, that's good at the top, and then it drops off a little bit until about the mid rounds, but there's still some good players there that Green Bay can add. So I think they're in a good position. I don't know if Gutekunst did that on purpose last year, knowing that the class was strong and what he thought he was going to need, and or if he just got lucky. But either way, good by him. The Packers definitely have a chance to add some impact players at positions that were their Achilles heel a season ago.
Yeah, and it's something that I think, you know, I talked to Thor about this a little bit. You look at the spots that they addressed last year, and I'm not going to – maybe I should, but I'm not going to give the staff 100% credit for, like, clairvoyance. I'm sure they've done plenty. They did – they had probably plenty of 2020 work done by the time the draft started last year. But you look at, man, the spots that they hit are spots that they really couldn't have targeted this year with any kind of success. I mean, I was chief complainer about Rashawn Gary last year. To me, he'd be edge two in this class without even a second thought as far as where I would have him sitting right there behind Chase Young. Sternberger, frankly, would be tight end one for me. I'd like him better than Troutman, who is my tight end one. And then you look at interior offensive line. I know we have the 2020 hindsight of just how phenomenal Elgton Jenkins played this year, but I think he'd be interior offensive line one for me. And those are spots, edge, defensive line, interior offensive line, and certainly, you know, I think tight end, where not an exciting class. Are there any other positions, Andy, that kind of have you scratching your head going into this year? And maybe it is a spot that Green Bay addressed last draft that kind of makes you happy.
No, I mean, I just wanted to add to what you were saying. You know, Darnell Savage, too, probably safety one in this draft. So I think they were, you know, very prescient in fixing those needs last year so that they didn't have to potentially reach for players this year. I'm right there with you with Sternberger and Elgton Jenkins, all those guys. I think they would have been at the top of boards this season. So I think they did a really great job of addressing those needs last year. And I'll just kind of say this and maybe wrap up that portion of the discussion with this, and that whether it was last year through you know, the draft and what they did last year and being able to develop guys potentially for this year, or whether it was, you know, kind of getting some, you know, hired guns in with a Rick Wagner and a Christian Kirksey and a Devin Funchess. I think Brian Gutekunst and the entire staff has done a phenomenal job of putting Green Bay in a position where they don't have to reach for a specific position group. Because let's be real, if, you know, at inside linebacker, if we were sitting right now with just Oren Burks, you know, as the front line inside linebacker, and Ty Summers, you know, right there, and Curtis Bolton as number two and three, you know, they have to address inside linebacker at minimum in the first three rounds, if not ahead of that. And, you know, same thing at right tackle. If we're talking about either Billy Turner trying to kick out a right tackle, or Alex Light starting there, or Yash Nijman, this is a position they would have to address on the first two rounds of the draft. So I think they've done a really great job of solidifying the group as a whole so that they can do the old cliche best player available.
I agree. And the one thing I would say that I have as a complaint would be the defensive tackle position, the yep. interior defensive line position. Twofold. A, I felt like to just grab a one tech would have been pretty easy. You saw plenty of them. Yeah, you know, guys that got overpaid. I don't know if I would have given, you know, Michael Pierce as much as the Vikings did. I think there were a number of interior guys that got paid, but there were also a number of guys that didn't. You know, Shelby Harris reportedly maybe took less to stay in Denver, didn't want to move, but a signing like him, or even, you know, what Linval Joseph got to go to the Chargers. There were a number of these, Andrew Billings even, there were a number of these one-tech guys just making no money. And you couple that with two things. First of all, it takes a while, I think, for interior defensive linemen to be ready at this level. I think that shows how you look at how much better was B.J. Raji year three than year one, year two than year one. How much better has Kenny Clark been in year three and four than he was in year one? Plus, you look at the shallow, I think, nature of that group of guys. I don't love any of them. Certainly not as outside of Kinlaw. Any of them I don't have in my top 25. I think Derek Brown is 25th for me, just because He's going to anchor somebody's run defense for a long time, but I don't see the juice. And then I got to have that if I'm spending a high pick on a defensive lineman. So you add into the fact that there aren't great prospects. Plus, it seems like they certainly could have made it work financially. And man, they must really like that room a lot more than I do. And that's fine. I could certainly be wrong about that. But they said a lot of those same nice things about Montrevious Adams, and they extended Dean Lowry. And Andy, you and I have both given our take on that. That's the one position where I really wish that they would have done something so that you didn't feel like they either have to do something this weekend, or you kind of stare at it as a big question mark. And hey, maybe today's signing is the underrated Mike Pennell-ish, Howard Green-ish move that gets some of this stuff done with Gerald Willis. But I think that is that's high hopes. That's high hopes for sure. Okay, one thing I haven't really discussed ad nauseum or really even discussed on this podcast, the draft series anyway, is the quarterback position. And I want to ask you guys, because I've made my take. I'll just repeat my take. My take on this is well known. I want at least 2 years of controlled cost with Rodgers. If it's going to be a first or a second round pick, and I kind of want it to be a first round pick, because man, you get to quarterbacks taken after about pick 15. And I know Rodgers was one of them, but the hit rate is extremely low. You talk about your Paxton Lynch's, I happen to not think that Minshew's going to work out. I happen to not think that Locke's going to work out, but Brock Osweiler
is pretty decent.
What's that?
Now Lamar Jackson guy is pretty decent.
Yeah, he is. It just the hit rate once you get into the second round is rough and beyond. I mean, you can kind of strike gold with Andy Dalton, but did you strike gold? I don't know. Anyway, the point is, I want to have at least 2 years cost controlled. I want to be, having that Carson Wentz run. And what I mean by that is the Eagles are so damn good they won with Nick Foles because they weren't paying Carson Wentz any money. The Chiefs just won the Super Bowl paying Patrick Mahomes nothing. And you can go on and on. The Ravens won the Super Bowl before Joe Flacco got paid. The Seahawks won the Super Bowl before Russell Wilson got paid. I want that opportunity, which means that if Aaron Rodgers is basically not tradable or cuttable in the near future, which he isn't, go look at his contract structure, I'm not spending a high pick. You want to grab Jalen Hurts at 94, great. Groom him, have him burn up the combine, and then after two or three seasons, you go get a second-round pick for him, and you turn him into draft capital and kind of move, kick the can down the street a little bit. Andy, where are you at with the whole theory of quarterbacks? And then maybe we can get into some guys you like and don't like.
Yeah, I think you have a really strong point. And I think that the best way to win right now is having that quarterback on the rookie contract who's playing at a high level, and you can build that team with all the excess money that you have because you're not spending at the quarterback position. And even though they didn't win it, when the Bears, seemed like they were going to have an opportunity a couple seasons ago, Mitch Trubisky rookie contract, everything else paid very well. They were able to go out and get a Khalil Mack and spend that money because they've got Trubisky there. Jared Goff and the Rams. Again, it didn't turn out exactly, but they were able to have that same sort of success because they weren't paying Jared Goff anything at that position. You mentioned the Eagles. I think the Cowboys, lost their opportunity to kind of do this with Dak Prescott to an extent. So, I do think that is the 1A best way right now if you can figure out a way to do it. So you're right in the fact that if you've got a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers on your roster, burning up a couple of those years when that, potentially really good rookie quarterback can't even play and you're missing out on that huge opportunity, that's kind of the best way to build a team at the moment. You're right. It probably doesn't make a ton of sense. My overarching philosophy, and Brian Gutekunst kind of mentioned this on his press conference call the other day as well, is I just think the importance of the position is way too much to overlook it if a gift looks you in the face, like Aaron Rodgers looks the Packers in the face. And I know this is not apples to apples because Rodgers is not saying he's going to retire anytime soon and his play isn't significantly falling off or up and down like Favre's was at the time. So it's not apples to apples, but I do think you get to a point where if you just have this ridiculous situation, like if Tua or Burrow, which we know isn't going to happen, but if Tua or Burrow would fall to 30, where you just, you know, run, you know, immediately make that call without even hesitation, regardless of whatever else it affects. Now, I don't believe in this draft that that situation exists. I don't think even Justin Herbert is going to get to 30, much less any, you know, the top two guys. If Herbert were to get to 30, I think that's an interesting conversation. I don't think Jordan Love is the guy where with the benefit of Aaron Rodgers on your roster, that he is such a luxury that he fell that you have to take him. I just don't think he's that guy. He's not that guaranteed guy. He has so much work that you have to put in. I love his upside. I love his potential, but quarterbacks like him have not, you know, statistically worked out when you have to put that much work into him. So I don't see that situation unfolding in this draft. Same thing with a Jalen Hurts, even in the second round. I think even that would be rich. Like you mentioned, if Hurts is there round three, awesome. You know, no issues, no concerns whatsoever. But I don't necessarily see that playing out as a good proposition in this draft. Now, if Brian Gutekunst and the Packers, unlike me and unlike you, and I'm assuming unlike Jacob, is absolutely in love with Jordan Love, and they think he is the next guy, whoever, you know, whatever guy that you want that to be, if they legitimately think that that's the case, then yeah, they'd probably be dumb to pass on him if they think he's that talented, but you can't miss, you know, you have to hit. He has to be that next guy. You have to be able to groom him. And then you can look at that decision in 3-4 years. But if you make that move, you better hit on it or it's going to be very, very ugly.
Jacob, are you kind of in the same arena there?
Yeah, I've talked about, you know, the phrasing is fiscal responsibility, and you mentioned it with Rodgers' cap hits, and Andy kind of talked about it. You know, you talked about the Jordan Love thing there at the end, and you said you can't miss. I mean, that's paramount. Look at how we talk about that Aaron Rodgers pick now, and it's because he's one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. He's a surefire Hall of Famer. If that ends badly and he's not good, first of all, Ted Thompson is not around long enough to where, I mean, think of how many different things change if Aaron Rodgers busts. I mean, that's the kind of risk that Brian Gutekunst would be taking as well as somebody going into his third year. If Jordan Love isn't good, it's unlikely that Gutekunst is going to be around for a long enough period of time to even see some things through or have a mulligan at that kind of pick. But as far as the quarterback position goes, in terms of the draft, I agree. The first two picks are rich. You know, you mentioned Jalen Hurts, potentially at pick 94, I'd be a little comfortable later, but I would at least understand that conversation in that time frame. I know they've done some work on James Morgan. You know, I wonder if Anthony Gordon is somebody that they would like. But really, to me, you know, I know Andy mentioned Justin Herbert. The only way that I'm taking a quarterback in the first round, if I'm Brian Gutekunst, is if it's Tua Tagovailoa. And I don't know if that's realistic, but at the same time, I didn't think Aaron Rodgers falling was realistic if you had asked me 15 years ago. So with that in mind, Justin Herbert, even if he's there, let the Colts come up and get him. You know, they have Phillip Rivers' corpse playing quarterback for 1 year. If Jordan Love is there, let somebody else come up and get him. Maybe the Colts, maybe somebody, maybe the Texans want to get wild. I don't know. I don't have specific candidates in mind off the top of my head right now, but let somebody else do that. The Packers, I don't necessarily think that they need to buy so much into their first round pick needs to contribute right now. But from an impact standpoint on their rookie contract, Ross, you mentioned it with Rodgers' cap hit. The soonest that Jordan Love could make an impact, or any quarterback that Green Bay takes, is their fourth season, which means you have 1 year to evaluate. And you don't even really have that season to evaluate if you're picking up their fifth year option. You're picking it up almost blindly, or based on preseason reps. The only thing, like I said earlier, is if I think you might not be able to pass that up is if it's Tua. And even with some of his medical stuff, I still have a hard time seeing somebody not willing to take that chance, like New Orleans or the New England Patriots or a team like that in the latter half of the first round if he does fall that far.
All right, Jake, I'm going to put a little thing out there because this is what happened today. You're comfortable relatively right now with the offensive line. You feel like Rick Wagner is a decent stopgap. Maybe you feel good about Yosh Nijman. I don't know. Your point is that he's on a 2-year deal. We'll draft a guy in the third or fourth round, grab a Jack Driscoll, grab a Hakeem Adeniji. And if we don't believe in them after a year, then maybe we spend a top 60 pick on a tackle next year and have them sit the 1 year behind Wagner. So you go and you get whatever. I don't care. Ayuk, Mims, Rager, you know, the Lord comes on from down high and gives us Justin Jefferson, whatever. You've addressed receiver and you're not freaking out about tackle. Or you've addressed tackle and you're not freaking out about receiver, which you're probably freaking out about receiver. But let's just say you took the receiver. Your favorite, I don't care who it is, your favorite back in this draft is there at 62. I don't care if it's CEH, Dobbins, Taylor, Swift. I don't care. The league has gone full running backs don't matter. Or maybe your guy is maybe three have gone and your guy is still there. I don't care. Do you take a back at 62? Are you comfortable with that?
Yeah, my guy is, and I have them all rated pretty closely between Dobbins and Swift and Jonathan Taylor with just a small gap between Clyde Edwards-Helaire just below that. I don't know if Helaire will be on the Packers board just because he's really short, but they have made exceptions before. And Andy, you made a point earlier today, I think, that the Packers are usually good for about one exception per draft. So maybe that would be the exception. But as far as 62 goes, I kind of made the point a little while back that, you know, the Packers took Eddie Lacy in the second round, and I think that was pick 61. I don't remember exactly that number, but those three guys that I just mentioned are all better prospects than Eddie was. And honestly, looking ahead, if Aaron Jones wants Christian McCaffrey running money, that's a non-starter. If he really wants anything above the Austin Ekeler contract is a popular one, and there's a good reason for that. I mean, that's kind of where the Mendoza line is, if you will, to get something done. Dobbins is a great player. I think he fits well in this offense. Jonathan Taylor, not the greatest scheme fit, but he's really good. And DeAndre Swift is somebody who's got a great all-around skill set that could help as well. I'm down. Honestly, as long as it's not a top-end first-round pick, you're leasing this running back for 4 years and letting him go. A first-round pick, you have that 5-year potential commitment. And you run into some issues like the Jaguars taking Leonard Fournette at 4 overall. It's still funny. Or with Zeke Elliott, for example, you know, I kind of laughed with Jerry Jones because when that whole situation is going on is you already made that decision to give them a contract extension. If you pick a running back in the first round and they're any good, you almost backed yourself in a corner of having to pay them because you really can't pick a guy in the first round and say, okay, 5 years and you're out. Even if you're good and Zeke's as good as they come. But as far as to get back to the Packers thing here, I take that guy and I would be willing to bet you if those guys are available, they probably are the best player available. And it just gives Matt LaFleur with the versatile skill sets of Aaron Jones and to a lesser degree, Jamal Williams and Tyler Irvin. And then you add a guy like Dobbins or Swift or Taylor it's just more things. If you can use LaFleur's creativity. For example, if they took, like you mentioned, one of those guys earlier, let's just say for argument's sake, it's Jalen Reagor, and then they can take one of those backs, that little group of weaponry, just those two small little tweaks, gives you far and away a better group of skill position players than you had a year ago, and some guys you can get really excited about in addition to a second really explosive back, which as good as Jamal Williams is, and he has some value, he's not that guy. And I think the more explosive players you have, this isn't exactly a bonus take here, but the better. So get as many of those guys as you can. If Taylor or Dobbins or Swift are available, I'm not saying run the card because obviously there's other guys that could be available there. But I talk about picking A players over B and C players. Those guys would be A players at pick 62. Take an A running back instead of a B defensive lineman, offensive, name your position. It really doesn't matter at that point in the second round. I would definitely take one.
Andy, same question to you.
Yeah. I think this depends so much on, you know, the conversations that they've had with Aaron Jones and his agents. You know, if they've you know, kind of come to the conclusion that they have a contract number in mind and they think that they're going to, you know, give that extension to Aaron Jones and pay him money. You know, and we could probably sit all day and have the conversation of whether or not you should pay running backs or not. But if they have already had that, you know, conversation and they think they know what they're going to do, then to me, you can't spend money on Aaron Jones and spend a premium second round pick on another running back. And that's just too much resources at a position, like you mentioned, Ross, where you can kind of find guys anywhere and you probably shouldn't use a ton of resources on them. Now, to Jacob's point, I think it's a very important position within Matt LaFleur's offense. And if you can find a dynamic receiving back like a Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you know, it certainly would seem to fit from a scheme standpoint. And I think you could do a lot of things with that type of player. And if your intention is to say, hey, we're going to, you know, bring this second round pick in and he's going to be the guy starting next year, we're going to let Aaron and Jamal walk and we're going to start the running back cycle over from scratch and the rookie's going to kind of be our guy, then sure, I think you can absolutely make that decision and move forward. Because honestly, I'd probably rather, you know, spend a second round pick with no cash, you know, really attached to it for 4 years and young, fresh legs, then, you know, pay a very high contract to a running back who's been in the league for 4 years. Now, I love Aaron Jones. He doesn't have a ton of wear and tear. If the contract's reasonable, I can certainly understand it and I can get it. You kind of have to reconcile the two ideas of not wanting to pay a running back and absolutely loving Aaron Jones. So, you know, reconcile that how you will. But I just don't think you can do both things in this scenario.
Yeah, I think I kind of understand that. The only potential disagreement, obviously, would be if you're going to if you believe that they would extend Jones, let Williams walk, and then that's your 1-2 punch. And then if it is the Eckler contract, you make $6-7 million bucks a year, and you pay the other back $800K. Then you got, you know, a less than $8 million bucks basically, and you're still kind of fine. You're not maybe where they are now, which is where everybody wants to be, and that's two capable backs playing on rookie contracts, making absolutely no money. I completely understand that. But I get it from both sides. The love of my life is Cam Akers. That's the one. He for me is the guy. I really think I like to, and maybe it's bad form, I don't know, but for me, I always try to find excuses for guys that maybe don't have the production that matches their traits. And it's not hard to find the excuse for Cam Akers. That Florida State offensive line was maybe the FBS's worst offensive line. I can with 100% certainty tell you from both a quality of play and a pro prospect standpoint, the kids I cover at North Dakota State were better than Florida State, which should never, ever happen on the offensive line or at any position group, frankly. But the talent difference, I just don't understand how it happened. Anyway, that the Florida State offensive line thing is a rant that I could go on forever, and I bet it's a rant that Cam Akers could go on as well. Anyway, let's move a little bit to the offensive tackle, and I just want you guys' take on the one lightning rod guy. And that's Ezra Cleveland, because Andy mocked Ezra to the Packers, I think just really in some sort of a personal insult to me this morning. But he's a guy that, you know, our own very own Peter Bukowski, I've kind of gone back and forth with him. He's very polarizing, as I mentioned. I mean, Jersey Al, our offensive line guy for the Cheesehead TV draft guide, can't stand him. I mean, it reminds him of Jason Spriggs. I gave him, I think, 69 or 70 on my big board. Matt Miller doesn't have him in the top 100. Arif Hassan did the consensus big board, which had both the evaluator, which we would consider ourselves. You know, I was part of the evaluator pool, if you will. I contribute to Arif's piece every year. But the forecaster pool, the guys that have big-time NFL sources, the guys that are more, maybe not more accurate on projecting who the best players are going to be, but more accurate on where they're going to go. They have, I believe, Ezra outside the top 50 as well. So where are you at with this guy, Andy?
Yeah. So I'm with you for the most part, Ross. This is more me projecting than it is hoping. I do not think that he is an ideal pick at pick 30 by any stretch of the imagination. So a couple things. I think he is simultaneously both underrated and overrated. So I think the people that are just totally freaked out that would say, you know, he's a bad football player and he's going to bust and you take him at pick 30 and it's just this horrible choice. I think that's probably extreme. Do I think he's the right choice at 30? No. Do I think it's aggressive to take him at 30? Yes. Do I think you could move if they liked him? Do I think you could move back at, you know, to maybe like pick 40 and still get him? Maybe there's some rumors that, you know, there's a couple teams that want to move up, you know, potentially to get him. I think the Browns were somebody on that list, either move up in the second round or move down from the first round. Whatever the case may be, I don't think he's an ideal selection at that spot. Now, I also think he is a solid football player that, you know, whose best football is still ahead of him. I thought Ben Fennell, you know, put it, you know, really well in our podcast for Pack-A-Day on Monday. He basically said, you know, you watch the guy for three games and nothing wows you, but at the same time, you kind of chart it and you realize, you know, he didn't allow any pressures. He was never on the ground. He constantly stayed in balance. But what I look at is, I don't see him being a passionate football player. And that would be something that I would have to, you know, if I were, you know, in a scouting position or a GM position, I would really want to sit down with him. And I want to, you know, is this a true passion? Because I don't see him finishing plays, you know, necessarily. I don't see him playing like somebody, you know, peed in his Cheerios. You know, I want to see, you know, a little bit more, you know, spit and vinegar out of him. And that's what I want out of an offensive lineman. But at the same token, you know, if he can pass protect, you know, eventually with a little bit of work, a little bit of strength, you know, do I necessarily care that he's finishing, you know, consistently in the run game? I don't, you know, Chad Clifton's a great example of a player who was a fantastic pass protector, you know, never was a good run blocker, you know, and I think you can live with that type of player. So I'm not on board. I don't think it's the right move. It just seems, you know, you look back to the Jason Spriggs pick, you look back at a Darren College pick, you look at a Rashawn Gary pick from a season ago, high upside at a premium position. You know, it's going to be a little bit of a project, but if you hit on it, he's a high end football player at a premium position. So it seems like something that they would do, but no, he would not be my ideal choice at pick 30 or with their first pick either way.
All right. I want to do something quick with you guys. I want to talk about a concept that I just now invented, and hopefully it's something that we use with the draft moving forward, and something I think I've got it pretty well done in my head. I want your landmine guys. And this is who I mean by your landmine guys. Who are the guys that you're going to do a little fist pump when they go before the Packers? My two big ones are Ezra and Jordan Love. If I see another team take Ezra or Jordan Love, I'm going to do a little fist pump. The other little fist pump I would do is if by some just monstrosity, the Lions took Derrick Brown at 3. That would be a phenomenal landmine, because you're cheering for your least favorite teams, if you will, to step on the landmine. Maybe you hate the Cowboys like me. Maybe you've got a Cowboys landmine. Jake, give me some landmine guys, whether it's guys you'd love to see teams you don't like take, or just guys that thank God they're off the board so Goody can't do that.
Yeah, I think that Benjamin Solak at the Draft Network wrote a really good piece today.
Please tell me I didn't steal Ben's idea.
No. Okay. Just the idea of these athletic, high upside offensive tackles, and he listed a bunch that just suck. I mean, for lack of a better phrasing there. And he talked about Austin Jackson. And he talked about Ezra Cleveland, some of these guys. And quite frankly, he did talk about Josh Jones in there, though I do disagree with him on him just being an athletic upside player. There is that to his game, but I do think there is a little more polish than there is with some of those guys I just mentioned. To me, in the first round, after Josh Jones, so the five tackles are the consensus top four for me, and then Josh Jones. After that, I have no interest in picking a tackle in the first round. And quite frankly, I would rather them take Matthew Peart or Ben Bartsch or Jack Driscoll or even Sadiq Charles or somebody like that in the mid rounds than I would them take Ezra Cleveland or Austin Jackson or somebody like that in the first round, or even honestly the second round. Maybe Austin Jackson the second round, I like him a little more than Ezra Cleveland. I just don't see the value there. So those are the guys that are definitely some fist pump players that if they take them and they're gone. Jordan Love was a good one that you mentioned. The other guy, and there's like a qualifier that goes with this, because I do like Denzel Mims. But I do worry, and I know Gutekunst said that he doesn't have a type when it comes to receiver, but I also know that he said, I don't remember if it was his post-game presser or postseason presser or if it was at the combine, but he used the phrasing, I like tall, long athletes. And I worry a little bit, at least, that if somehow Denzel Mims and Justin Jefferson were both available, that he would take Mims over Jefferson. And that's not this horrendous miss on somebody that I just, and I do, I love Justin Jefferson. I think he's a great prospect, and I think he fits everything the Packers need. But I also know that Denzel Mims is somebody that probably has to go before 30 for Green Bay to have a chance to take Jefferson. So I, and on that end, if they're together,
that's galaxy brain stuff.
It is. It is. But I do think that if you put it all together and they were both on the board at the same time, I just worry that he would take Mims over Jefferson. Now, at the same time, I've said one of my bold predictions. I don't think it's a bold prediction to say that Henry Ruggs goes wide receiver one. But I do think it's a somewhat bold prediction that after the two Alabama kids and CeeDee Lamb, I think that Denzel Mims is going to be the fourth wide receiver off the board. So that's something that, one, it pushes Jefferson down a little further in range for Green Bay to potentially trade up, or it gives them the opportunity to have somebody like some guys I like better, Brandon Ayuk, Jalen Reagor, Justin Jefferson, obviously to fall a little bit. So those are the guys, the quarterbacks, the athletic offensive tackles, and then Mims to a lesser degree. Maybe one more with Cole Kmet, just because there's those rumors of him going late in the first round. I cannot picture the Packers doing that. Zach Cruz pointed out that the highest pick the Packers have spent on a tight end in ages is Jace. And that was just last year, and it was pick 75. And that, I mean, that's not a high pick. I can't picture Green Bay spending pick 30. Ian Rappaport had the Packers trading up for him. I can tell you if they do that, the computer's going through the television. Like, there's just, I mean, I don't get overly angry about a lot of stuff. I was quiet but calm, I guess, about Rashawn Gary. But I mean, this is, I see the upside with Gary. I see nothing with Cole Kmet at his ceiling as Kyle Rudolph, a solid player, not spectacular, not somebody I don't think you need to be picking in the first round. So there's one more guy that I can throw in there for you.
Andy, give me a couple of landmine guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it is based off of, you know, positional needs. So, you know, Jordan Love, of course, you know, I think would be one that you'd like to see go ahead. Just so, you know, potential another player at a position of need drops. You know, I think any running backs that would go ahead of 30 would be of benefit to Green Bay. You know, Cole Kmet's a good one. I'm not a huge Austin Jackson guy. It'd be interesting to see if they would overlook his three cone time to take him, because he kind of hits everything else and could certainly compete at right tackle. But, you know, that could be one. But it's going to be more on the defensive side of the ball. I think anytime an edge rusher goes, you know, Gross Matos, you know, would be a really nice one. Marlon Davidson's been super all across the board, and I don't think he's going round one in any stretch of the imagination. But if he would, that'd be fairly amazing. You know, that'd be a landmine guy. And then, you know, the safeties as well. You know, Grant Delpit, I know we've kind of gone back and forth on a little bit, Ross, but that would be one that I would, you know, really, really struggle with at that point in the draft if that was their first pick. And then I think even, you know, any other safety that you want to put up there at that point in the draft, I think would just be a little bit rich for what they have, you know, on the boards or, you know, on the roster currently. So I think all of those, you know, specifically with positions that they don't necessarily need at the moment, would be a little bit of a, you know, celebration dance.
Andy, where are you at with this group of defensive tackles? Because it's something. So Rob Domofsky went on Twitter and, well, I think went on ESPN probably and shared it on Twitter. His ESPN beat writers mock draft, I believe, said Ezra was there, said Reagor, Ayuk were there, maybe even Mims was there. And he went instead with Ross Blacklock, somebody our guy Peter Bukowski has really been negative about. His number one athletic comp is Kyree Thornton. But I think there's the idea that maybe this defensive tackle group is not great and they are not, you know, guys with a lot of juice. And if you're going to take somebody without juice, we'll just take, you know, whatever run stuff you want around four or five and plug them in if they're not going to get to the quarterback. Where are you at with this defensive tackle group?
Yeah. So, you know, Rob and I are on the same wavelength of a major need across that defensive line. And if Ross Blacklock was somebody that I loved, you know, I would be all for that selection for that very same reason. You know, I've said this multiple times on the Pack a Day podcast, but you go back to the four games that they lost a season ago, Chargers, 49ers twice, and the Eagles, all four of those teams gashed them in the running game in a variety of different ways. And Green Bay had no answer for it whatsoever. Not only am I afraid that that could happen again, not only am I afraid that Kenny Clark needs some help across the defensive line, but I am scared to death if Kenny Clark would go down with an injury for any period of time. A 2-3, you know, game stretch even would be something that I just don't think that this defensive line necessarily has the ability to overcompensate, you know, from a run stopping standpoint. So getting somebody that can, you know, clog up the middle a little bit and be a space eater, even if they're not a dynamic, you know, pass rusher, I think that's a need at some point in this draft. I just don't see that guy being on the board at 30. I love Justin Madubuike. I think he's a fantastic player that really kind of, you know, gets you all the things that you need. I think he can be stout at the point of attack. He also flashes some of the top end athleticism. I love his first step. There's just a few plays on tape that are just rare type of plays. And he's kind of the guy that I really like, you know, after Kinlaw and after, you know, Derek Jones. You know, but you go back to Echols, you know, scouting report, Madubuike wasn't even in the top 10, you know, in that group, which was shocking to me. So, you know, who knows where he's going to end up. But to me, if you can get a guy like Justin Madubuike in the third round, especially, holy hell, that would be amazing. But even in the second round, I would like that a whole heck of a lot more. And with Blacklock, I just question if it's going to be a Green Bay sort of guy, you know, 7'7", 7'7", 3 cone, which is, you know, below average for the position, you know, 6'3", 290, you know, I think he can hold up against the run, but this is not like a traditional run stuffing type of player. I think he kind of wins with that first step. You know, I just don't necessarily think that that's going to be a, you know, a player that is going to be in play at 30. Would it shock me? No, but you know, when my article today for Packer Report, you know, I put 10 guys that I think are in play and 10 guys that I don't think are in play. And Blacklock was in the group that I do not think are in play, you know, in the first couple days. So we'll see what happens, but I don't see it happening.
Yeah. And the two guys, the general consensus guys, after the, you know, two top guys would be Derek Brown and Javon Kinlaw. I think everybody says are not everybody, but most folks will tell you, well, it's Blacklock and Gallimore, and both of those guys have athletic issues. But it's just, you know, like I've mentioned before, it is a spot where they have taken what do you want to call them, non-athletes. I mean, Kenny Clark was a sevens RAS guy. Montrevious Adams was an outlier for his class. Over and over again, they've shown that they will care about technique a little bit more on the defensive line than this freakish athleticism. My guy is Jordan Elliott. I really, really like him, like his frame, like his ability to get up the field, like his ability to affect both the run and the pass. I think is somebody that you could get at 62 occasionally in a mock draft. I've been able to grab him at 94, just a guy that I think has the ability to make a play. But you know, you talk about Marlon Davidson, Devon Hamilton, Rashard Lawrence, Fotu, Raekwon. I mean, if you're just going to take a run stuffer, I'm with you 100%. You do it later. You do it, I don't care, round four, round five, I've mentioned it. If you want to get a big old one tech, draft Bo Allen where, you know, people remember Bo Allen from the Badgers. Draft Bo Allen in round five or whenever in the heck Philly got Bo Allen. If you're going to spend a top pick, it needs to be a guy like Kenny Clark that has the juice. And that's what made him such a valuable pick and why I love Gallimore and Elliott, because I think they have the juice, especially Gallimore, man. You watch how much gap replace, twist, stunt, stem, shuffle, all the stupid things that Oklahoma did with him. And then you watch the very rare and occasional snaps when he was allowed to just go north and south. That's why I love him so much. Again, I talk about finding the excuse. Why can this player be better? Put him in a scheme that isn't stupid. And that's how I think he can be a little bit better. Jacob, where are you at with the Packers as far as what you think they need in the cornerback group? Because that's another group that we have not been able to really dive into. We talk about the linebackers. I've had extensive conversations about the safeties just because of my love for Ashton Davis with guys. Where are you at with this group of corners, and where does it lie as far as a need for Green Bay?
It's interesting because compared to, you know, what I've read, what I've seen, stuff is the scheme fits might be a little questionable on some of the players. I know Eric Crocker is somebody who does a lot of work and he's really good at it. And he's talked about there's quite a few zone corners, especially towards the top. As far as a team need, you're kind of talking about a little bit today. Everybody's favorite number monger, Andy Benoit, was talking about how he said, quote, easily the Packers' biggest need is slot cornerback. And
okay,
I don't know if it's easily their biggest need, but if you do look at their roster, as of right now, their starting slot cornerback is Chandon Sullivan, which that might be a good thing. If it's the Chandon Sullivan of last year, it's a good thing. If it's the Chandon Sullivan that played in Philly, it's not a good thing. And the depth behind the two starters, which are Jaire Alexander and Kevin King, Joshua Jackson, Ross, I know you and I were both really high on him. Andy, I think you said something recently that you refuse to believe he won't be a good NFL player. And I'm kind of there with you guys, but this is his year. If he's going to be a player in Green Bay,
it better not be in the slot.
It better not be in the slot. I agree 100%. So I do tend to wonder, and I know the value is definitely on the boundary, but I do think with the way the team is presently constructed, the slot corner very well could be Jaire Alexander. And that's especially if Josh Jackson is good. Either way, it's a position that Green Bay definitely could and maybe should look to add. Kevin King is somebody that I don't think he's not as bad as the people that wish every day that he was TJ Watt. And he's not as good as the people that defend him because those people annoy them. He's somewhere in the middle. He's a starting caliber corner that has value in this league. The reality also is he led the team in interceptions last year by a pretty significant margin. And if he has another year like that, where he has some of the sexy numbers, he could price himself out of Green Bay very quickly, especially considering the two big boys that they have to sign. And those guys will take priority over anything else they do next year. So with that in mind, you have Alexander will be entering, well, they'll pick up his option, but he'll be entering a year where he's looking for an extension. Josh Jackson will be looking at a contract year. And then the depth after that gets a little even shakier than that. So getting some guys that can play, I think they could stand to do another guy on the boundary. I do wonder if, because of some of the potential for scheme fits, if they try to find somebody after round one, maybe Damon Arnette in the mid rounds, round two, round three is that guy. I know he ran a little slower, but he's somebody that could be that guy. Or you're looking, you know, maybe later in the draft and they take a shot like they did with a Kadar Hallman type and take somebody from LaVert Hill out of Michigan comes to mind, as somebody who's played a lot of man coverage and can do some of the things that Petten typically does like to do. Now, whether or not Mike Petten is around after this year, I guess could be a topic of discussion too. It's at a later date, but just some of the things that those guys like to do and some of the things that their corners are good at. I mean, even if Petten's not around, Kevin King is a man corner. Jaire Alexander is a man corner. Josh Jackson, maybe not so much, but the other guys, that's what they typically want to do. So finding some guys that can kind of play, and if they want to play a boatload of defensive backs, that means you need a boatload of defensive backs, because Green Bay was very fortunate last year that their DB group, I think Jaire started all 16 and Kevin King started 15 of 16, and he missed one game against Washington and that was it. Chances are that that's not going to happen again in 2021. And then, I mean, the other thing that Gutekunst mentioned is basically he kind of said without saying, well, if we don't find a corner we like, we're just going to bring back Tremont. So I think that that's certainly something that they'll look into also.
Yeah, that was a cool moment, I think, in the conference call that Andy and I were on with Brian Gutekunst yesterday. Was, I thought that, for an executive, I thought that was about as upfront as you're going to get a guy to be. Basically said, yep, well, we know. And if we don't like where we're at with, and I'm paraphrasing here, but if we don't like where we're at corner after the draft, if we can get something done financially, we're probably going to do it. And that was, I mean, that's basically what he said. It's like, hey man, if we're, if Tremont's our best option at cornerback after that, we're done with the draft, we're probably going to bring him back. And I thought that was refreshing. Did you feel like that was, what am I, do you feel like I'm kind of taking that a little too far, Andy?
No, I think that's absolutely the case. You know, he absolutely made, you know, mention to the fact that they're going to see where they're at after the draft and kind of go from there. Now, that could be just lip service to say, you know, hey, we haven't forgotten about Tremont Williams and, you know, we'll see where we're at after the draft. You know, he could be way down on their list of, you know, potential priorities. I don't think that's the case. You know, I kind of pencil him in on the roster if they don't get somebody in the top 150, you know, maybe 175 in this draft at the cornerback position. But that being said, you know, I trust the talent of the cornerbacks on the Packers roster right now, and they haven't played consistently enough. But to me, one of the biggest acquisitions of this offseason was not a player. It was Jerry Gray from the Vikings. And mm-hmm. I think they're really hoping that he comes in and kind of gets these players to play at their peak potential and their peak ability. Because even somebody like Jair Alexander, who is a really good cornerback, I think everyone, and I think you two will agree with me, believes that he can be great. And I mean, really great. And we've seen flashes of it, but we haven't seen consistently great. We've seen really good. We've seen good. We've seen flashes of great, but I think he can be really great. I think Josh Jackson can be a really good corner in this league. I still think Kadar Holloman can be good. I think Chandon Sullivan can be good. And even going into the safety position, you know, Darnell Savage needs to be really, really good at that safety position. We know Adrian Amos is good. So they have the talent. And even if you want to go further with Raven Green, even a Will Redmond, who I think, you know, taking to the safety position and for the very first time, I thought played well enough and showed well enough on special teams that I think he can be your fourth safety and, you know, not have to worry about it too much. So I love the talent that they have on this roster. I just think, you know, that they have to, you know, get to their peak performance. And obviously the one that I forgot and missed was Kevin King, which is really the poster child for this, where we've seen these flashes of great plays, but the consistency is completely up and down from a week to week basis. So Jerry Gray needs to kind of get this group on the right path. They've spent a ton of resources, both in first and second round picks, as well as with a major contract to Adrian Amos. So this group as is has to perform. And I don't think they're in a luxurious position where they can spend another top 100 pick on corner. Now, if it's best player available, go for it. Fine. They can use it. But I just think that they have to get the most out of the talent that's currently on the roster.
Yeah. I mean, and one thing that I think you mentioned though, Andy, is the need to look beyond and yep. the draft not being about 2020. And if we do live in a world where Tremont will not be on the team in 2021, I would be just blown away by that. But if we're living in a post Tremont, post Kevin King world, then maybe a guy, you know, does make sense if they fall in love with an AJ Terrell or your boy, Jalen Johnson, who, by the way, I'm coming around and he did move up, I think, in the last big board, but I understand that. And yeah, you're right. Jerry Gray, I think, is potentially the best safeties coach in the world. You look at what he did, watch Andrew Sandejo play anywhere else but Minnesota. Look at the draft capital that was invested in Jayron Kearse and Anthony Harris, just nothing. And then basically turning Harrison Smith into a Hall of Famer. And maybe Harrison was going to be a very, very good player without Jerry, but it's a big time acquisition. Andy's absolutely freaking right. This is one thing too, with COVID-19, I'm glad they didn't fire Mike Pettine. I think installing a new defense in this offseason would be terrifying. I'm scared beyond recognition for these teams that have put in within new systems and new head coaches. I don't even know what to expect from first year offenses, first year teams, you know, with these new guys. I think it's terrifying. All right. Real quick, guys, let's go Thursday and Friday. I want a semi-realistic, not Andy, what, don't make me sad anymore. Say that. Not what you think they will do. Give me your A+, and, you know, don't give me Chase Young, Isaiah Simmons, and CeeDee Lamb. Give me your A+, realistic, 70-80% realistic, 30-62-94. Go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, I think at 30, it would be Josh Jones. I just think that's somebody that, as Jacob mentioned, you know, not only flashes the long-term upside, but I also think he can play right now. I think it'd be a great battle right away at right tackle with Rick Wagner. Even if he doesn't win it, he's a fantastic swing tackle, you know, right out of the gate. And then, you know, he can fill in at either tackle position if either were to go down. Or you could kind of do it like, you know, Lane Taylor and Elton Jenkins did a season ago. Maybe you get, you know, Jones some snaps early, and if all of a sudden he looks better, or for, again, some reason, if Rick Wagner goes down with injury, you know, you can plug Josh Jones right there. So that's kind of it's for me an ideal pick around pick 30. I think, you know, 62 is a little bit more interesting. Like I mentioned, I love Justin Madubuike. I think he makes a lot of sense, you know, for a variety of different reasons. The struggles at defensive line, you know, being one of the major ones. So I guess I'll pencil him in right there. And then I think, you know, you start looking at, you know, 94, then I think you have to address the wide receiver position. So I think there's a few different guys that could be available. You know, I don't know, who do you want to pencil in at, you know, it's going to be around pick 100 at that point. But you know, one of those, you know, flashy wide receivers that can make some plays. I'm struggling off the top of my head. Help me out, someone.
John Hightower.
That's who I was actually, you know, going towards. So yeah, John Hightower would certainly be one of those players that I think you could be, you know, maybe get around that spot. That would be a really great pickup.
All right. Gun to your head. Pick 30.
Who it's going to be?
Yep.
I'm going to say the same. I'm going to say, you know, that it's Ezra Cleveland. Sorry.
I hate you so much.
I know.
Yeah. Andy, if I ever see you again.
I'm emotionally hedging. So at least I get it right. Right. So even though if I maybe don't like the pick, I can literally say, hey, look how smart I was.
If there's the burning bag of poo from Billy Madison on your front door, it was not me.
It's from Jacob anyway.
I live a hell of a lot closer than Ross does.
Yeah, he does. Okay.
Amazon deliver those? Can you get Amazon to deliver flaming bags of poop?
That'd be great. That'd be phenomenal. Okay, Jacob, give me the same thing. Give me your best case scenario, your realistic best case scenario, 30, 6492 or whatever the numbers are. But 6496.
I think you did that like, yeah, I think that was dyslexic. 6294.
30, 62. There you go. Just give me the picks.
Sure. Yeah. Gotcha. So my first, I guess I have to ask a question is the answer of Justin Jefferson realistic at 30? Because if it is, cool. If not, then I'll move on.
And so, okay, let me talk about that for just one second. How fascinating did you guys find it that guy, the I can't remember who the reporter was, but that the random NFL exec said, people are going to be wronger this year than they have ever been. How excited did you guys see that? And how excited were you?
Oh, it's fantastic. Like, that's exactly what I want right now. It's just high drama. Like, let everyone, you know, just be batshit crazy. Just, you know, it's fantastic. I can't wait.
Oh, like when Marlon Davidson goes 16, I'm just going to lose my mind. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, you know, that's something that it's from a fan standpoint, it's a little scary because, you know, the unpredictable last year was Rashawn Gary. I mean, all of us, I don't think anybody like ran around the room other than Mike Smith when that pick was made. So it's interesting because then, you know, Ryan Pace can trade up to 15 and take Cole Kmet or something stupid like that. But it also could mean the Packers trade up to 21 and take Ezra Cleveland or something like that too. So it's interesting. So in terms of the picks, you talked about it being that. So we didn't get a verdict. I did want to see if Jefferson was the.
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, yeah, I'll never forget even doing that that fun live show thing with Andy, whatever that was, a Google Hangout or whatever godforsaken deal we did. It was like you, me, Jack Wet for a couple other guys.
Yeah.
And they took Jair and everybody just went, huh. Not like I need another beer, like when they took Gary, but everybody kind of just went, huh. Okay. And I, you know, I think that's kind of the thing of the last, and it's kind of scary too, is the last pick where I felt like I just flipped out was Haha. That's the last time that I've been like, well, I mean, Josh Jackson, obviously, but that's a completely different thing. The last time we've waited all night on a Thursday and they're like, you know, they took the guy everybody thought was the guy they needed at the position of need, the top guy, boom, perfect value. Everybody's celebrating. It was Haha. So go ahead with your Justin Jefferson, go on with your bad self.
Yeah. I think Jefferson is, first of all, I've kind of talked about this quite a bit is I think that I mentioned it earlier, kind of with the Mims thing is I think that Jefferson and slot receivers in general tend to get pushed down the board a little bit. The NFL values those boundary receivers. And that's certainly what Denzel Mims is. That's certainly what Jalen Reagor is. There's a little more versatility with Brandon Ayuk, but those are guys, you know, those are kind of the seven guys with Jefferson and the big three that we talked about earlier that could get there. But you want to talk about somebody, Justin Jefferson is to the Packers receiving core what I think Andy mentioned Josh Jones would be to this right tackle. It's just a seamless fit. their strengths match up with what the Packers need, what Matt LaFleur wants hypothetically to do with his receiving core. Now, I trust LaFleur to make work whatever it is. I mean, guys, he was making it work last year with Jake Kumerow and Geronimo Allison. So I know he can make chicken salad out of, you know what, but with Jefferson, he's a big slot. He plays well in the scramble drill, which is something I know people are going to, the Ben Fennels of the world, and it's great. And he's right. You know, the Aaron Rodgers highlights are from the pocket kind of thing, but I know people want to say, throw it on time. That's not what Aaron is. And some of that is what makes him great too. The MVP stuff that he did in 2011 and 2014, some of that was sandlot ball. And you need to have guys that are able to come back to the ball. That's what Randall Cobb was good at. That's what Jordy was good at. Jennings, Jones, all them dudes that they had when the Packers offense was at its absolute peak. Jefferson can do all those things. And you've seen it on film with a guy like Joe Burrow, who, I mean, take this for what it's worth, but Matt Miller thinks that guy's ceiling is Aaron Rodgers. And he kind of plays that way. He moves, he keeps his eyes downfield, those sorts of things. Jefferson is a seamless, perfect fit to the receiver core. You want to talk about, like you said, going crazy and running around the room. The guy Andy mentioned, Jones is one, and Justin Jefferson would be an absolute home run pick on that. 62, we talked about this earlier. I'm all for, I understand the Packers have needs on their defense, but I know, Ross, you've talked about this a little bit with Pettine and the defensive staff as a whole is, you know, it's kind of time for them to make do, I think. And they had last year, the Packers spent a boatload of money. They had two first round picks, and they've spent their last, what was it, Ross? I think you said all 10 of their last first round picks since Derek Sherrod have been on either a defensive back or a line of scrimmage defender. So that's insane to me, first of all. But the idea that I think the defense, it's time for them to kind of make do, and for the Packers to, I'm not saying they got to build a team that has to outscore everybody. And hey, the defense is going to be trash and you just have to kind of make do with it. But the defense as constructed, in my opinion, with maybe another piece in the middle, is good enough to win a Super Bowl, I think. So with that in mind, moving towards the offense, finding explosive players, getting more weapons on that side of the ball. I know that's kind of the key word is weapons. Pick 62. We kind of talked about it earlier, is J.K. Dobbins. And I think that that's somebody that you look into with the understanding that, yeah, if you make that pick, Aaron Jones is probably walking, and that's okay, because you're just leasing these running backs and running them through every 4 years. So I would pick him at pick 62, and then you get into the 94. This is where we got to start. I've said it before, I think the Packers are taking 2 to 3 offensive linemen. Andy, I know you kind of laid that out really well as to why. This is where you find your tackle, whether that's a Ben Bartsch or a Jack Driscoll or somebody like that. That's something that I think would be a prudent move, to kind of get somebody that you think could be a starter in a pinch. And then if you're not able to do that and you want to kick the can a little bit, it's possible to bring Jared Veld here as a guy who we talked about. He's kind of like the Tremont Williams of the offense. If it doesn't, they didn't mention him specifically, but if the draft doesn't break the way they want on the offensive line, I certainly think that's an option they could look into. I wanted to take a swing at 94 with Donovan Peoples-Jones, but I think Ross, you kind of said it best by saying, blue blood program, 5-star recruit, high level athlete, guys like that just don't seem to last that long. So I don't think that he would. So I don't think that's realistic. So to recap real quick, pick your tackle in the third round between Driscoll and Bartsch, J.K. Dobbins, and Justin Jefferson.
Gun to your head, who do they take at 30?
Jalen Reagor from TCU.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's the same thing that I said. I think, and Andy, he ended up in your guys that they won't take. And I understand that. I understand where you're coming from on that for sure. Shorter. I just a little bit of tea leaf stuff with Goody yesterday. I'm talking about, you know, more of a coincidence than anything else that all of his receivers ended up being super tall. And, you know, then by design. Also mentioned they got to be able to play, which again makes me think, okay, maybe he's moving towards a shorter receiver. Specifically mentioned at the combine to me how much he loved Randall and them being about the same height at 5'10 and 5'8. With the news, we ran a 4.47, verted 42. I mean, freak show vert, 99 plus percentile. 11'6" broad, 99.7 percentile, absolute freak show stuff. With the news that they are basically throwing out agilities from the combine, the NFL team, somebody important said that. If the short shuttle and the three cone are even halfway between what he posted from his virtual pro day and the combine, not what he posted, but even halfway between, Jalen goes right back up into the nines with an RAS and a guy that the Packers would target. I'm trying to read the Goot tea leaves. Gun to my head, I think it's Rager, and I would freak. I would be so happy, not because, he's some tremendous value. You look at my big board and you'll find Jalen Rager at 37. Why would I be doing backflips if I got my 37th best guy at 30? Well, just because he's what they need, and he's a phenomenal player at what they need, and he's in my quality starter tier. He, I think, will, at some point in his career, as I mentioned, with that tier, I think he'll be one of the better 30 or 40 receivers in the league. That's not cool. Yeah, it is, because there's 96 starters now. And right now, the Packers, for all of last year, were rolling out with a top five receiver. And, you know, Geronimo might have been number 95. And by the time MVS's confidence was done being shattered, he was probably in the 80s as well. It's a complete paradigm shift for that team. So that's who I think they'll take. As far as my ideal situation, I think if I'm looking at my big board, which, guys, is my pinned tweet, I'm going to update for our VIP members. I'm going to update my Packers big board, which is basically taking this board and shifting it for positional needs of the Packers. We'll be referencing that with our live draft coverage at Packer Report as well. The guy I think that is realistic on my board for them to get at 30 is my number 15 player, Laviska Shenault. I understand completely that I'm a bit on an island. Not a completely lonely island. I'm there with my friend Benjamin Solak from the Draft Network. And our guy, PFF, Mike Renner. Mike, my favorite Bachelor contestant of all time. We're all there on Visca Island. Just such special gifts athletically. I think, man, if you could get them the ball in space, get him breaking tackles, and then over the course of his career, just have Devontae work with him and, you know, teach him the nuanced stuff. If he gets to be even an average route runner, the rest of his physical gifts are going to make him just a top end guy. I've said it now ad nauseum. 2018, Laviska Shenault was one of the 10 or 12 best players in college football, period. Full stop. So he's my 15th guy on my big board and the highest guy on that board that I think they could realistically get at 30. And that sends me to the highest ranked guy on my board that I think they could realistically get at 62, and that is number 27, Jordan Elliott. I realize that I'm higher on Jordan than most, but I do honestly think that he's a first-round talent that they can get at 62. Now you've got your running mate for Kenny, maybe not ready in 2020, but in 2021 when Kenny's playing on that new contract, you can kind of utilize both of those guys as both run stuffers and guys that have the juice. And then I think the most realistic guy that I can get on my board at 96 is number 75, Jack Driscoll. That is one guy, man. You look at Arif's consensus board and you talk about the forecasters board versus the evaluators board. The evaluators liked Driscoll way more than the forecasters. I think that his lack of meanness, if you will, his inability to move people and be more of a pass-protecting mirror right tackle gets kind of the more progressive thinkers liking it, and the old-school scouts not liking it so much. That's why you see a guy that basically can't move in Isaiah Wilson potentially as a first-rounder, and a guy like Jack, who knows, could be a fourth-, fifth-round pick. So that's my dream scenario would be Shenault, Elliott, and Jack Driscoll build up front and give Rodgers that toy to really open up the offense in Laviska Shenault. Guys, this was a long show. Andy, thank you so much for taking the time to come on with Jacob and I. Jacob and I had this plan for a while. Jake, I really appreciate your time as well. Guys, check out or be on the lookout for another episode. I think Gilbert and I are getting together on Thursday morning before the draft. We'll probably do a phenomenal wrap-up show after the draft is done, but this is going to do it. This is going to be the last draft preview edition for the Packer Report podcast. We want to thank again our title sponsor, Stadium View Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall. Folks, during this pandemic, please support local. Go Pack, go. Oh.